The Joyful Friar podcast is made possible by the generous support of our friends. To support the podcast, please visit nathan-castle.com and donate today. Hi, and welcome to this episode of the Joyful Friar podcast. I'm Father Nathan Castle, your host. Today, I'm doing part three of a trilogy around the story of Omi, the child soldier, the friend you haven't met yet. You can go back to the previous two episodes to get caught up on this story, but in brief, he came to me in a dream and showed me the day he was abducted from his school in Iraq. He was 10 years old with other 10-year-old boys in school when his classroom was invaded by a militia of young men, not all that much older than he was, in their teens. He said that all the 20-year-old and older males had already been conscripted into military service, and they were going down to younger and younger ages, even to the age of 10, to turn somebody against his will into a child soldier. He explained to us, the scene he showed me in the dream, that where I met him at all, was he was pointing a gun out a slit of a window. He had people behind him insisting that he shoot, but the person out the window was a woman who saw him, looked at him, and said, "Put that down. This is not who you are." He reasoned in the moment that she didn't look like an enemy combatant. She looked like a school teacher or a businesswoman. And she spoke authoritatively as an adult to a child in a way that he respected. So he put the gun down, didn't shoot. Then he had hell to pay from his abductors, who were insisting that he become a child soldier. He said that for the rest of his life, which wasn't very much long after that moment, he was given all the worst jobs to do. He was continually called a baby, a sissy for not shooting. He was deprived food. He was shot not very long after that, because he said there were bullets flying around us all the time. It was just inevitable. One of them would hit you. And he said, when one did hit me, it hit me in a way that caused my immediate death. So I didn't suffer. I left the body quite rapidly. Well, I did an episode last time on compassionate response. It was focusing on what can we possibly do from where we are to help children that are in harm's way, especially those who are in war or in other chaotic circumstances. This episode, I'm going to deal specifically with the spiritual practice that might arise from this story. Where I want to focus is, it's really kind of two-part. I really admired the way he could listen to the truth of the woman who showed great courage by staring down the barrel of a gun and saying to the young person on the other end of it, with his finger on the trigger, "This is not who you are." Didn't that take a lot of courage? And then on Omi's part, in such a high tension moment, he heard her all the way in his heart. He took it to heart, and he acted in a nonviolent way, even though he knew it would bring him grief, and it did. That's not who you are. He just heard the truth of that, and so he didn't behave in a way that was fraudulent. He behaved according to the person he truly was once he was called on it. He mentioned that his captors told him and the other boys that they had abducted that it was manly and grown up to learn how to fire a gun and to be able to command other people at the point of a gun. And they mocked the whole idea of being a child, that being a child was babyish and weak, and that they shouldn't want it to behave like children or babies. But he said to us, "But I was a child. I was 10 years old. I was not a baby, but I was a 10-year-old who cried, not because he was a baby or he was weak. I cried because I missed my family. I was hungry and scared all the time. When I cried, I had good reason to cry. We learned from him in his afterlife that he was given choices, as are all the people that we ever deal with. And he decided he didn't want to skip over being a child. In fact, he wanted to enter into it in an afterlife mode where he could still be in school and still be learning things and have some approximation of what it would have been like to grow up through childhood in a peaceful time and place on the earth. I've seen that in a lot of the stories that we do, that there's lots of ways in which people can do an afterlife version of what they didn't get to do here. He wanted to remain a child and move through the growth that a child ordinarily does given the right circumstances. So we're going to deal with who and what you are, what it means, or the importance of being a child when you're a child. And then I'm going to share a scripture. I'm a Catholic priest, and last weekend I preached at a church, and we use the common lectionary. We don't just choose scriptures randomly. Many of the Christian churches use a common lectionary where scripture readings are laid out over the course of an entire year, and the preacher goes to see which readings are going to be used this weekend and then composes his or her homily or sermon around those themes. I'm going to take you into one little section of the first letter of John that's pertinent here. So we're going to do those three things. That's not who you are. Well, the woman who was staring down the barrel of a gun didn't know Omi. They were strangers to each other. But she said with confidence, in a moment that could have been the moment of her death, "That's not who you are, young man." So she had a sense of what a 10-year-old boy, what he is or who he is. She didn't define him positively. She defined him negatively. That's not who you are. 10-year-old boys are not soldiers, and they don't shoot at innocent people. That's not who you are. He heard that. What do you think about that? That's one of the ways to come to self-knowledge as we mature. There's certainly, the passage from childhood through adolescence into young adulthood is murky and difficult for lots of people. And finding out who you are, coming to a self-understanding, is part of psychological maturity. I've dealt with that, of course, in my own life years ago, but in most of my career, I've been working with 18 to 25-year-olds, college students in campus ministry. And of course, they're competent to be away from home a lot of the time, going to college. And they're gaining skills that they will use to support themselves and perhaps a family throughout their adult life. But they're young adult. They're in an in-between. Well, figuring out who you are, sometimes that happens negatively. This is not who you are. One of the ways that manifests in college is that it can seem very important when you first arrive that you have a major. It becomes your identifier, a name tag. When you arrive on a college campus, I remember doing that in San Antonio at Trinity University, arriving and feeling that it was important to tell everybody my name and that I was an art major. I was studying art for the first year, largely because I had native talent at it, and it was employed during my high school years whenever anybody needed posters or graphics of any kind, yearbook stuff, those banners that the football team ran through. Posters to support somebody's election to student government or cheerleading or whatnot. I was this poster. I had a drawing talent. So I would go to college, I would say I'm an art major, and it defined who I was, at least temporarily, and it was true. But it didn't take me more than a year to figure out, no, this is not really who I am or who I aspire to be. I have other things to do that I want to explore more. And so I moved away from that previous identity of who I was to, a next one. And when I did that, wasn't really able to do it quite positively. It was always provisional. Well, I'm not studying art. I'm not an art major anymore. I'm studying social sciences and sociology and gerontology. I did lots of other things. But figuring out who you are is hugely important, partly in that functional sense that I'm just mentioning around a college campus and possible career paths and academic choices. But, moral ones, what kind of human being do I want to be? Do I want to be grasping and aggressive about wealth? Do I want to be somebody who has a moral code that they live by, and then can that stand up to peer pressure? Omi had lots of peer pressure. They wanted to quit being a child at 10 years old, and he said that that's what I am. So I'm wondering how you think of this as you hear it, especially at whatever age you are currently. Who do you think you are? Do you have a good, succinct answer to that? Do you know who and what you are? That is not really variable according to the winds of change. Do you know who you are essentially as the human being that you are? That's, I think, really important. And if you have can answer that question with some confidence, I think that it creates an inner peace that there might be other things in my life going on that I have little or no control over, but I know who I am and I know what I am. I know my purpose. I know my beingness. So, if you feel unclear on that, I think one thing that anyone can do is to quiet yourself. If you have some spiritual practice that I would call prayer, meditation, centering, something, whether that's indoors or out or however you do it, can you go inside and speak to your own heart of hearts and let it speak back to you about who you are, not just what other people want you to be? Child. Omi knew he was a child. He enjoyed being a child. He knew he wouldn't always be a child, but he knew there were things to be learned while a child that if he were able to stay in school and be raised in a loving home, he would learn lessons of childhood that would take him into adulthood a day, one day at a time. He knew that being a child was a good thing when you're a child. And he wasn't going to have it robbed from him. The people who were able to abduct him and take him against his will, they stole a lot of him. He never saw his parents again, but they didn't steal his sense of self. He knew that he was a child and that being a child was a good thing. Isn't that remarkable for a 10-year-old? What about you? Jesus, whom I love and follow, said, unless you have the heart of a child, you won't enter the kingdom of heaven. Not that you won't be allowed in, but the kingdom of heaven has too many joys that are of the kind that children especially savor, that if you don't have the heart of a child, you won't even want in. I think of, being an adult who goes to Disneyland and stays in the parking lot or sits on the bench watching people go on the rides. Adults who go to the beach and won't go in the water. I suppose people have their reasons for these things, but I don't want to be that guy. I want to go on the ride or go in the water. Being a child of God. I was recently at a conference on consciousness, and it had a lot to do with cosmology, about the scale of the universe or the multiverses of all that is. Whenever you go to things like that and you hear scientists speak from their skill set, the whole universe is so immense, it can feel like you're so unimportant in it. But the one doesn't have to follow from the other. I think that you're enormously important, and that you came into being because God wanted you to be, that you're not generic, you didn't roll off an assembly line, that you were handcrafted by God, and that God gave you the gifts and talents, that your intellect, all that you are, that you are a chip off the old block, that you come from greatness because you're made in love by the one who made everything, and that you're a child of God, a child of the universe. Let me pause right there. Does that sound outlandish? Have you absorbed messaging that you're not important? Sometimes that messaging happens in childhood, and it can really thwart the beautiful growth of a child when they're told you'll never amount to anything. You're not as good as, or as fast as, or as smart as a sibling or somebody else. If you got that kind of messaging, you don't have to believe a lie just because it's an old lie. It doesn't have to define you. I've had a lot of feedback from a previous series, a trilogy of podcasting, from Sylvia, whose husband and child died in an automobile accident. And then she died not a few years later of, I think, ovarian cancer. And she said from her afterlife place, don't let the worst thing that happened to you define you. If you had messaging in childhood that you're unwanted, you're not good enough, there's nothing special about you, don't let that define you. You don't have to. Get some help getting rid of it if it seems like that idea fastened itself to you in such a way that you can't get rid of it, then ask for help. The help will be there. You're a child of God, you're a child of the universe, you are who God created you to be. I remember being told in first grade that the world was already a great place when God had a new idea. That God said, as good as the world is right now, wouldn't it be even better if there were you? And then God said, let there be you. Sometimes when I'm doing this talk in front of a group, I'll say, when I get to the part where your name goes, please insert your name. Ready? One, two, three. Let there be you. And that you come on the scene, you arrive in this world as a child of God, ready to make the world better because of your presence in it. Even before you do a thing, it's already better because you exist, because you are, and you're a child of God. I hope that you'll, if that's a difficult idea for you to accept, I hope you'll sit with it and ask in your heart of hearts, is that true? Am I really extraordinarily loved? Was I loved into existence by the Creator? Do I have an eternal life? That is, am I more than the temporary being that is running down toward the grave? Or is it true that I will survive my death and that death can't stop me? Death did stop Omi at 10 years old, only that part of him that was stoppable, that was killable, but then he kept going. Finally, in the Easter season, where Easter for Catholic folk and a lot of other Christians is not just a day, it's a season. In fact, it's 50 days long. And during this season, we keep pondering the transition from the horrors of crucifixion on Friday, that we call Good Friday, to Easter morning. There's still a lot of questions on Easter morning, but it's dawning that, oh my God, it's true. Jesus is risen from the dead. And what's that mean for us? I believe he's the template showing all of us that we're way sturdier than we thought we were. and that there's an opportunity to overcome every awful thing, that there's a chance for a fresh reset of you if you need it. Last weekend, this was a really brief reading from the first letter of John, Saint John, in the New Testament. It says, "Beloved," that's you, "beloved, see what love the Father has bestowed on us, that we may be called children of God." And that's what we are. Beloved, we are God's children now. What we will be later hasn't yet been revealed. We do know that when it's revealed, we will be like him, and we will see him as he is. I love that because it both states a present truth. You are a child of God right this minute. And it also contains joyful hope for a future moment that hasn't yet been revealed. We don't know what we will be yet, but you can't change this. Our status will always be children of God. I might be a child of God that does this or that, has these other characteristics or qualities that are part of your future life story. You are a child of God this minute. What we shall be later, what you shall be later, has not yet come to life, but stick around because it will. So I'm hoping that if you struggle with sadness or grief or frustration of some kind or a sense of pointlessness to your life, I hope this might be absorbed into you at least a little bit. It would be Omi's gift to you, a little 10-year-old boy who said at the end of the chapter in book three, that is his story. We asked him, "What is it you want to say to people?" He said, "I want them to know that I am the friend they haven't met yet. I am the friend they haven't met yet." Or you might rephrase that to say, through this story, Omi is now the friend you are meeting, somebody that can reach across space and time and eternity, which doesn't have to be distant. He can be right close, can say to you, "I would like to be your friend." Jesus said that near the end of his life. "You call me all kind of things. You call me rabbi and Lord, and that's good as far as it goes, but I really love it when you call me friend." Well, Omi has said he would like to be your friend. Remember that in that awful exchange, that moment when he could have pulled the trigger and killed an innocent woman, she just said, "That's not who you are." She'd never met him, but she knew that he had an essence that was beautiful and had nothing to do with killing somebody. Omi and you might not have met yet, but he's looking at you and he's saying, "I know who you are. You're my new friend. At least I offer you my friendship." I'm going to leave it there. I'm grateful that you joined us for this episode of the Joyful Friar podcast. I'm Father Nathan Castle, your host. I'm praying for you. God bless you. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Joyful Friar. Please like, follow, and subscribe. You can visit me at nathan-castle.com. Send me a message by clicking the contact button. God bless.